Okay, well, thanks for having me. So we've heard a lot about infrastructure from Marathon Oil, and we've heard a lot about pricing from Professor Beck Koch, and I think that's important, right? It's not as important to me as the following. The RFS2 was also established to reduce greenhouse gas emissions and provide climate mitigation through the use of biofuels, through the increased use of biofuels. And I think biofuels are doing a tremendous job in reducing greenhouse gas emissions, and we should not forget about it. And a lot of my research sent us on these issues. So when I went to Washington, D.C. in December, I testified, and some of my key points that I testified on are here. The RFS2 works as intended. It reduces greenhouse gas emissions relative to petroleum. Biofuels industry has a very high rate of technology adoption, much higher than you see in other sectors, much higher than you see in the general oil sector, a high rate of technology adoption, and that reduces the greenhouse gas balance and the overall environmental balance of that fuel. And the RFS2 worked as intended, and it encourages the adoption of these technologies and will so in the future. So in my presentation, I'm going to go a little bit in the baseline, greenhouse gas emission baseline, carbon intensity baseline of petroleum-based fuels, and then compared to corn ethanol, and where, in which direction are they're heading. And then I'm going to talk a little bit about my issues with the RFS2 analysis and the need to redo the analysis at this point in time where so much new science has been developed. So basically, it's a long and wordy slide. All we sort of need to remember here is the petroleum mix going forward will be heavily weighted by tight oils, by fracking, by Canadian tar sands. There's some mitigation because of gas to liquids, admittedly, but overall, we will be going towards higher carbon intensity fuels in the baseline. This is a picture of the Bracken, the fracking area. You can see at night the flaring, and that is greenhouse gas emissions, right? So you can see on this slide how tight oils, fracking, etc., and the U.S. Petroleum-based mix at much higher rates than previously. And the greenhouse gas emission of these tight oils, or unconventional oils, as they're usually called, have higher greenhouse gas emissions, higher carbon intensity values compared to our petroleum mix that we had in the past. So the baseline will go towards higher carbon intensity fuels in the future for petroleum. How does it look on the biofuel side? Well, one of the key issues in the biofuels debate is land use change. And I've researched extensively on land use change since Searchinger came out with a penalty of over 100 grams per megajoule. So to recap, land use change is a penalty that's assigned to biofuels production based on the assumption that a shock, you know, that is driven by increased biofuels policy in the U.S., that shock will rattle through the export markets. We produce more domestic fuel feedstock, biofuels feedstock, and then export markets will make up any fuel feedstock that is not being imported and produce it themselves. So what we've seen in this space is that the longer we study it and the better we develop our databases as scientists, the lower this international land use change penalty or penalty adder has become, right? It is now settled among several studies that it's not 100 grams per megajoule, it's actually less than 10 grams per megajoule. So that factor, that penalty factor, has come down by a factor of 10. I've been involved working closely with Argonne's national grid model, grid life cycle model, which is sort of the gold standard for modeling these effects in the U.S., and updated that model significantly, or was co-author in updating it, and released our spatially explicit factors. So we look at, on a county-by-county basis, we're looking at the carbon adjustments from corn production and from other feedstock production, other cellulosic feedstock production, corn stover to ethanol production, switchgrass in with Kansas. What we found is that the land use change is less than 10 grams per megajoule. Just this week, we issued yet another model with other co-authors, a whole new look on land use change model, and we came out with close to the same results, less than 10 gram per megajoule for land use ADA, which compares to the 28 grams per megajoule that EPA currently still assigns to corn-based ethanol fuels, and 30 grams per megajoule that CARB assigns to corn starch ethanol fuel. In addition, as I also mentioned in my testimony, the industry, the ethanol industry, has a very high rate of technology adoption. When I tour plants, there's always some sort of retrofit going on, some technology being implemented that made that plant more effective, increases yield, reduces energy consumption on a per unit output, better heat integration, a whole host of new technologies going in, new enzymes being developed that reduces overall emissions. So it's a lot, it's a very dynamic industry. So this whole presentation was basically done in cooperation with Life Cycle Associates, and I think Bob Dineen mentioned the report earlier on. And I have provided some input to that study off and on. And when we look at that slide, we see that going forward, or what is emerging in the science, is that we have to really look at the corn plant as the sort of the origin for multiple fuel and feed products, right? So out of the corn plant, we can produce starch, ethanol, and then DDG on the back end, but from the corn stover that can be sustainably removed, we can produce cellulosic ethanol and corn replacement feed. In addition, we can also produce some additional cellulosic ethanol from corn kernel fiber. So these are the main products, right? And we gotta keep them together, right? It's one plant producing all these products. We have to do proper co-product accounting for that. But if we do it, we come to a very impressive conclusion here that corn ethanol goes to 39 grams per megajoule. And that is the fuels, the cellulosic ethanol, and the cellulosic ethanol from the corn stover, and the starch ethanol, and the corn replacement feed from the same plant credited as co-product. We are really going down to 39 grams per megajoule, which compares quite favorably to the 97 grams per megajoule of the petroleum baseline. That's an over 60% reduction in greenhouse gas emission, which is quite impressive. The RFS2, obviously, when it was first established, was relying what is by now outdated science. We have to make a plea to EPA to rerun the numbers. There's a lot of new science available now to them that wasn't there. And back then, you know, it was not mostly their fault. I mean, the models weren't there, the database weren't quite there. But now we have good sound industry data and we have good sound modeling data. And we need to rerun the results. For example, right, what I've what I've pointed out. The petroleum baseline will move slightly up from 93 to 97 grams CO2 per megajoule in a revised look. The land use change emissions should significantly move down from currently 28 grams per megajoule to below 10 grams per megajoule. We need to credit emerging practices such as corn stover removal. We need to look at new technologies that have been going in and reducing chemical inputs. Nitrification inhibitors are being applied to the fields. There's technologies like Energen emerging that has a potential to produce ethanol more efficiently. Obviously, the whole farming sector has started to produce the crop in a much more efficient way with new tractors, GPS tractors, etc. All of these life cycle modeling variables have to be incorporated, and actually they have been incorporated into the latest GREET model by and large, but EPA needs to pick up that latest GREET model as their starting point in their modeling efforts. The data is there now. Here in summary, right? Petroleum baseline by 2022 is not 93 grams per megajoule, it goes up to 97 grams per megajoule. So as petroleum baseline in the future goes up to higher levels, the greenhouse gas baseline of corn ethanol goes down to 39 grams per megajoule, which means we have a 60% saving in greenhouse gas emissions over petroleum fuels. And again, so the circle comes back. I hear a lot of talk about infrastructure and struggles from Marathon and from RFA and I see it. But if we are serious about climate change, or if we are appealing to people that are serious about climate change, this is the main argument, right? If we're serious about climate change, we are going to be overcoming the infrastructure efforts, because we have to, because we feel strongly that it is good for the environment. This concludes my talk. Thanks.